Now streaming on SBS On Demand. The Hospital in the Deep End. Our hospitals are under pressure like never before.
Oh my God.
And when the system buckles, we all pay the price.
That's not good.
In this landmark series, three notable Australians step onto the front line to see what it really takes to save a life.
I honestly didn't think it was like that.
The Hospital in the Deep End. Stream now on SBS On Demand.
Hey, Dan, welcome back to Full Story.
Hey, Noah, pleasure to be here.
So David Littleproud surprised many of his colleagues by standing down as leader of the Nationals this week. His successor has been chosen, Queensland Senator Matt Canavan. He has put his hand up for the leadership in the past, but has been unsuccessful. How did this vote play out? Was it tight?
All reports are that it was tight, and this has obviously happened very quickly because the era of politics that we're in at the moment, anything can happen, and frequently everything does happen. But this certainly wasn't on anybody's bingo card that David Littleproud was going to resign. There was, as you mentioned, many of his colleagues had no idea. We certainly had no idea. So it didn't give the contenders a great deal of time, firstly, to be able to decide if they wanted to run, and then to be able to canvass colleagues and do the numbers. I mean, this is, if you think about the most recent leadership contest with Susan Lee and Angus Taylor, that was a prolonged period. This was over really between the period of 3:30 yesterday when Littleproud made the announcement and then 10:30 this morning. So the MPs who put their hat in the ring was Kevin Hogan, who was the deputy leader, Canavan, of course, and Bridget McKenzie. Certainly it's our understanding that the numbers between Canavan and Kevin Hogan were quite tight, but obviously he has prevailed. And in a show of unity, or at least a public display of unity, all of the Nationals were there at the press conference standing behind him, showing that they are behind that new leader. And obviously in the row of MPs behind Canavan was Littleproud, obviously a former leader. Michael McCormack as well is another former leader. But it is a fascinating turn for the Nationals and what it means for the party and, of course, the coalition moving forward.
Let's talk about who Matt Canavan is. He's been outspoken as a backbencher on issues like climate change, free speech, on COVID policies. What was his pitch to the party room?
Basically that the Nationals needed to be stronger. And he made the comment in the first press conference. And the language and the tone that's used in these press conferences are indicative both of what I imagine was a summary of his pitch to his colleagues, but also how he wants to present the party to the electorate. And he used a phrase that basically we need more of everything in Australia. And that included babies. That included fossil fuel powered barbecues. That included humour. It's hard to kind of put it in a short, snappy phrase, but that's essentially what he's a really big personality who has not really been shackled throughout his political career, and we can get into his views on certain things. But there are lots of politicians in this building that follow talking points, that have very rehearsed lines, that stick to a script. Matt Canavan is not one of those people. He speaks quite in a forthright way, in a blunt way. And he appears on lots of different media. For instance, he goes on the ABC, where perhaps his colleagues wouldn't be. So there is a strength of conviction in his politics. Again, lots of people will feel offended by it, question it, but he believes in what he believes in. And I think that is what the type of leader he is going to be as they take up the fight to One Nation, is just not hold back. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Well, let's talk about how he plans to take on One Nation. Senator Canavan was an ally of Barnaby Joyce, who, of course, late last year defected to One Nation. He is seen as a figure on the populist right of the party. What do you think that means for the direction of the Nats and their ability to challenge One Nation?
So I think it's quite clear at this point whether or not Canavan or any of the Nationals will admit it, that their primary opponent at the moment is One Nation, that they are so far away from government. This is really a fight for the very existence of the Nationals. So One Nation is the primary opponent that they have to defend against in the first instance to be able to survive as a party. So it's really interesting thinking of the approach that Canavan is going to take. And he's been really fascinating in terms of, since we've seen the rise of One Nation, he's almost become the strongest person pushing back at that. And it's been surprising in some respects because he shares a lot of, I mean, you mentioned how close he was to Barnaby Joyce, but in a policy sense, a lot of his things echo with One Nation, certainly on energy policy, for instance. But the crucial difference, and Canavan made this point today, and I suspect it's going to be the line that's repeated, is that Pauline Hanson has been in Parliament for 30 years and she has not delivered. She's never been in government, obviously. She's never delivered a road or a dam or a rail project. She is incapable of actually doing things. So I think what we'll see from Matt Canavan is presenting kind of a similar policy agenda, or at least talking about similar things. I suspect there'll be differences on immigration, for instance. He's been critical of Pauline Hanson's comments on Muslim Australians, for instance. But it's that point of difference is going to be the Nationals, at least historically, have been a party of government. We can do things, we can get things done, whereas One Nation is a party of protests and they will not be able to get things done.
When David Littleproud resigned, he said that he was proud of his tenure leading the party, and he pointed to the party's role in pushing the Liberals to oppose the Indigenous voice to Parliament on net zero, on nuclear policy. All issues that, you know, Matt Canavan has been agitating on. But Dan, there are also the very policies that many have said have contributed to the collapse of the coalition. How do they reconcile that?
It goes to the very heart of this existential crisis that the coalition faces at the moment, and this sense that there are competing priorities, competing interests that are almost irreconcilable. And I think you just highlighted it. I think it's been mentioned today that whilst Canavan is elected the leader today, he really has been leading the party certainly since the last election. That was the sense that from the backbench, his influence, he was able to push the party. Certainly the prime example is the dumping of net zero. He's been the one that's been able to orchestrate it. And quite rightly you said, I mean, the adoption of these policies has coincided with the collapse in the vote of the coalition, which has created room for One Nation to rise up. So I think there is that irreconcilable tension between those priorities, and it just makes it so much more difficult for the Nationals and the coalition to potentially get back into government. But as I said, at the moment, the opponent, and they mightn't admit it, is not Labor. It is One Nation. But of course, electorally, the more you fight with One Nation, the more room it opens up in the middle, the more opportunity Labor has to be able to consolidate its power. So that is the paradox of Matt Canavan, is he might be able to defend One Nation, but in defending One Nation, is he potentially making the Nationals and the coalition less electable to the broader electorate, which should be, and I emphasise the words should be, the ultimate goal of these parties.
Yeah, because I think many voters would associate him, as you mentioned before, with the sort of Sky News After Dark, the anti-woke, the Christian right, which might be hard for voters to differentiate between, you know, the policies and the positions that he pushes and that of One Nation. I wonder whether you think Matt Canavan leading the Nationals will make for a more stable coalition alongside Angus Taylor as leader of the Liberals.
The phrase stable coalition it seems like a bit of a contradiction in terms at the moment, nor after what we've seen. I mean, it's really hard to know. On the face of it, things have quietened down since Susan Lee was ousted by Angus Taylor. There was a febrile atmosphere surrounding not just the Liberal Party, but the entire coalition. That has settled down for the time being with the Liberals and Nationals. In terms of, is there going to be friction moving forward? Absolutely, because you look at those point of tensions. What were the things that really created the animosity between the Liberals and Nationals? It was the Nationals continually front running, going ahead of the Liberals on policy positions. They, of course, made the decision to dump the net zero by 2050 target before the Liberals. And I think there's already signs. My colleague Krishani had a story in The Guardian earlier this week about childcare policy, proposing a significant expansion of paid parental leave. Now, that is quite different to what the Liberal Party are proposing. So you can see a situation in which the now Matt Canavan-led Nationals go ahead of the Liberals, announce a policy, and we find that tension continuing. So, look, I think I don't know what the nature of the personal relationship is between Angus Taylor and Matt Canavan. They're, of course, in different houses. Angus Taylor's in the lower house. Matt Canavan is in the Senate. So they wouldn't have had a lot of interaction that you ordinarily would between the leader of the Libs and the leader of the Nats. But I think it's fair to say that whilst there is a degree of calm in the coalition at the moment, anyone suggesting that there won't be ruptures, or at least potential for ruptures, whether it's on policies or just sheer concern for their electoral survival because of One Nation, is probably kidding themselves.
Dan, you referred to some of the policy differences between the two. Matt Canavan has also been critical of Trump's war on Iran. He's spent the last couple of days tweeting about it. He's penned an op-ed at the weekend, essentially saying that that war is unwise, that there are no clear goals and objectives, that US regime change in the past has caused chaos around the world. That position is not only at odds with the Prime Minister, but with Angus Taylor. Could that open up some of that debate that you're talking about on an issue that largely has been bipartisan?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a case study of one area, at least, or a part of Matt Canavan's appeal, if you like, that is very, very different to the other candidates on the conservative side of politics in the mainstream party, so the Liberals and Nationals. Is speaking with certainly people in Labor, for instance, they make the observation that Canavan is very engrossed in the kind of MAGA ecosystem that plays out primarily online. There are parts of it that is filtered through on Sky News. It's not necessarily front and center for the mainstream. And I think this is one area. I mean, if you think about the conflict that is going on with the MAGA movement in the United States, of obviously Trump is supportive of this war, but there are very prominent people, Tucker Carlson, for instance, that are opposed to it. And Canavan kind of fits in that kind of strain of populism, this kind of protectionist, nationalist, I guess what Trump said he was initially going to be. So that is one area where Canavan has resonated really strongly with that kind of right-wing online ecosystem. And we saw it with the COVID mandates. We saw it with the hate speech laws in Parliament. He's a real kind of poster boy in that space. But that runs very counter to even what a position that Angus Taylor and the Liberal Party will have. So how much of a strain that causes, I don't know. But what we do know about Canavan is that he doesn't resile from his views. He's not the sort of politician that will say, well, you know, I said those things in the past, I'm now in a position of authority, I'm never going to say them again. I suspect if he's interviewed tonight, he's going to repeat it. That's just the nature of what he is. So it is very interesting, and watching the way that he continues to engage in that right-wing online ecosystem whilst he's leading a mainstream parliamentary party is going to be fascinating.
We'll be right back.